Okay, so freedom, you know, once you've had it, it sticks with you, right? At least that's the ideal.
Makes sense, yeah.
But you know, history is full of complications. And today's case, well, it really throws a wrench into things. We're diving into Scott v. Emerson, an 1852 case from the Missouri Supreme Court.
This is a big one. Not just about one man fighting for his freedom. This case, it really messed with how people thought about slavery back then.
And states' rights too, right?
Totally. And it's like a preview almost of the huge legal battles that were about to come before the Civil War. Super important to understand this one. It sets the stage for so much.
So let's get to it. Dred Scott, he's at the heart of this. An enslaved man suing for his freedom. That's a pretty bold move, especially in those times.
Bold, absolutely. You got to remember the context. The times were, well, they were crazy tense. But to answer your question, Dred Scott, he belonged to a Dr. John Emerson, an army surgeon.
Ah, okay.
And here's where it gets interesting. Emerson, he takes Scott with him to Illinois. Now, Illinois was a free state.
So, no slavery there.
Nope. And then they move again, this time to the Wisconsin Territory, and slavery there. It was banned outright by the federal government, thanks to things like the Missouri Compromise and the Northwest Ordinance.
So for a good chunk of time, Scott's living in places where legally he's a free man.
Exactly. It wasn't just a quick visit either. We're talking an extended period.
Yeah.
He even got married in Wisconsin to a woman named Harriet Robinson.
Wow, starting a family, living a free life. So then what happened? They went back to a slave state.
Right. So Dr. Emerson, he passes away in 1843. Scott becomes the property of Emerson's widow, Irene Emerson. And get this, Scott, he tries to buy his freedom and his family's freedom from her.
Makes sense, you know, you'd want to secure your family's future.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Emerson, she refuses, and that's when Scott decides to fight back legally. He argued that, hey, I lived in free territory, so I should be free, period.
And that's where the whole once free, always free doctrine comes in, right?
Bingo.
Yeah.
This was a legal principle that Missouri at the time recognized. It basically said, if you've been in a place where slavery is illegal, well, you're free, even if you go back to a slave state.
Seems logical, at least on the surface.
Yeah, it had to do with this idea of comity. It's like states, they should respect each other's laws, and federal law too, of course.
Right. Okay, but we're talking about the 1850s. Things were pretty heated back then, to say the least.
Oh, absolutely. Huge tensions between the North and the South. It was like a powder keg just waiting to
Wow.
explode. You can't understand this case without thinking about that.
It's like the court case is happening with this massive political storm brewing all around it.
Exactly. And that storm is going to have a huge impact on how this all plays out.
So walk us through it. What happens when Scott takes this to court?
So he starts by filing a lawsuit in St. Louis at the Missouri Circuit Court back in 1846. But here's the thing. He lost that first case in 1847. Not because the court said he wasn't free, but because of a technicality. It had to do with the evidence they used to show that Mrs. Emerson actually owned him.
Evidence issues, those are always tricky.
Right. And this specific issue was hearsay.
Hearsay. Now, for folks listening who might not be lawyers, what's that mean in plain English?
Basically, hearsay is like secondhand information. Imagine someone testifying in court about something they didn't actually see or hear, just something someone else told them.
Ah, so the court wants firsthand accounts.
Yeah, they prefer direct evidence, you know, from people who actually witness stuff. So Scott's case, it got tripped up on that procedural rule.
Okay, a setback, but not a total loss. It didn't address the real question of his freedom, really.
Exactly. And the Missouri Supreme Court, they saw that. They knew the lower court messed up, so they gave Scott a new trial in 1848. And this time, things go Scott's way. In 1850, that same St. Louis Circuit Court ruled in his favor. They said, yep, once free, always free, applies here, you're a free man.
Victory, at least for a little while.
Yeah, a moment of hope. But Irene Emerson, she wasn't done. She appeals the decision to the Missouri Supreme Court, and that's where things take a really, really dramatic turn. And that's what brings us to the 1852 decision we're talking about today.
Gotcha. So we're at the big leagues now, the highest court in Missouri. What are the huge legal questions that the justices have to grapple with?
Well, there are a few big ones all tangled up together. First, does living in a free place, like Scott did in Illinois and Wisconsin, automatically make you free under Missouri law?
Right, because he came back to Missouri, so that's the law that would apply.
Right. Second, and this is where the politics get really heavy, should Missouri stick with this once free, always free idea? Especially with the whole country fighting over slavery.
Yeah, talk about pressure on the court.
Huge pressure.
Yeah.
And finally, there's this tension between two legal ideas. State sovereignty and comity. Basically, how much power does Missouri have to make its own laws about slavery, even if those laws clash with what other states or the federal government say?
Big fundamental questions about power and freedom. So, what did the Missouri Supreme Court decide?
The majority of the court, they went against Scott. They said, once free, always free. Yeah, it's not going to fly here. They said, Missouri, it has the right to decide how slavery works within its own borders. And they flat out refused to honor the anti-slavery laws of Illinois and Wisconsin. They even called those laws repugnant, like morally offensive to Missouri's view of slavery.
Repugnant? Wow, that's strong language.
Right. Shows you how deep the divide was.
What was their reasoning behind all this?
Well, they were really worried about the national fight over slavery. They basically said Missouri had to protect itself from, you know, what they saw as the threat of abolitionism spreading. And they were more concerned with that than with sticking to this idea of once free, always free.
So they were letting the politics of the time dictate their legal decision.
It seems that way, right. And they even admit it, in a way. There's this part in a majority opinion where they say, and I'm quoting here, times now are not as they were. And they talk about how sticking with once free, always free could lead to the overthrow of our government.
Whoa, they straight up said that. That's pretty wild for a court to just come out and say they're making a decision based on fear of political upheaval.
Yeah, it's not your typical neutral legal reasoning.
So I'm guessing not everyone on the court agreed with this.
You're right. There was a dissent, a strong one, written by Judge William Scott Gamble.
What did he have to say?
Well, Judge Gamble, he was all about sticking to precedent, to what the courts had said before. And he believed in comity, respecting other states' laws. His main argument was that when a slave owner takes someone to a free place, they're choosing to follow the laws of that place.
They're agreeing to play by those rules, so to speak.
Right. And he said that once someone's been legally free in a free place, that freedom should stick with them, no matter where they go. He saw the majority's decision as basically giving in to political pressure. And he thought that was really dangerous, could undermine the whole legal system.
So you have these two really different views clashing. The majority, they're all about protecting Missouri's right to have slavery. And the dissent, he's saying, hey, we have to uphold the rule of law. We can't just change the rules because things are getting tense.
Exactly. It's a classic legal dilemma, but with incredibly high stakes. You could even argue that Judge Gamble saw the majority as sacrificing justice for political expediency.
Yeah, and remember, this is all playing out against the backdrop of a nation on the verge of tearing itself apart.
And that's what makes this case so powerful and so relevant even today. It shows how the law can be used to uphold injustice, especially when those in power feel threatened.
Right. Okay, so the decision comes down in 1852. Dred Scott loses. His freedom is denied. What happens next? What's the immediate fallout from this case?
Well, for Scott and his family, it's tragic. They're back to being enslaved under Missouri law. But the impact goes way beyond that. Scott v. Emerson, it basically killed the once free, always free doctrine in Missouri.
So it closes off a legal path to freedom for enslaved people.
Exactly. And this case, even though it happened in Missouri, it had ripple effects across the country. It laid the groundwork for that notorious Supreme Court case a few years later, Dred Scott v. Sanford.
Oh, yeah, the one that really threw fuel on the fire.
Exactly. And Scott v. Emerson, it provided the ammunition, so to speak. The arguments in that Missouri case, especially about state sovereignty and not having to respect laws against slavery, those same arguments popped up again in the Supreme Court. It showed that courts in slave states, they were getting more aggressive in protecting slavery, even if it meant bending the rules.
It's a reminder that even state-level cases can have a huge impact nationally, especially with an issue as divisive as slavery.
Absolutely. It's like a chain reaction,
right?
One legal decision sets off another. And in Scott v. Emerson, the majority was very clear. States have no obligation to enforce laws repugnant to their own. But Judge Gamble had a powerful counterargument. A slaveholder who chooses free soil subjects himself to its laws.
Two sides of the same coin colliding head on.
And that's the essence of this case. It's a microcosm of the whole struggle over slavery. States' rights versus individual rights, the power of the law versus the demands of justice. It's all there.
Yeah, so much packed into this one case. Okay, so big picture, what should we take away from our deep dive into Scott v. Emerson?
I think the biggest takeaway is that legal decisions, they're not made in a vacuum. They're influenced by politics, by social pressures, by the fears and anxieties of the time. And sometimes the law, It can be used to uphold really terrible things.
It's like slavery.
Exactly. This case, it's a reminder that we have to be vigilant, we have to be critical of how the law is used, and who it's being used to protect. Because the fight for justice, it's ongoing.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, there you have it. Scott v. Emerson, an 1852 Missouri Supreme Court decision that reverberated throughout the nation. It's a stark lesson in how legal interpretations can be twisted by political forces, and how those twists can have devastating consequences.
It's a powerful reminder that the law, for all its power, is ultimately a tool. And it's up to us, as citizens, as legal professionals, to ensure that it's used to promote justice, not to perpetuate injustice.
Couldn't agree more. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I think it's worth asking ourselves a question that echoes Judge Gamble's dissent. How does this tension between state sovereignty and comedy continue to shape our legal and political landscape today? Think about it. Are there other instances where political pressures might be influencing legal decisions, shaping outcomes that impact our lives and our society? It's a question worth pondering.
It definitely is, and it's a conversation worth continuing.
And continue it we shall. Join us next time on The Deep Dive as we delve into more fascinating legal cases that have shaped our past and continue to influence our present.